everybody. This is Gordon, W2TTT, and this is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. Any stations with emergency or priority traffic, please call K2 Bravo Alpha Romeo. Excellent answer. No, that's my favorite question to ask for which there is no answer, unless something bad happens, in which case that means we all have to change modes here. Alrighty. Good evening, everyone. The Bergen Amateur Radio Association runs a technical net once a week, and it's open to all radio amateurs licensed to operate here in the United States of America. We hope you'll participate, and we hope that you have a question, a comment, a confusion, and if you don't, we hope that you'll check in anyway, because your presence can add to the conversation, because we might ask you a question, which is also very, very good. So check in even if you don't have a question or comment for the net. Alrighty, so the way this net works, it's a little different than others, is we ask you to consider what our scope is first. And the scope is that we have, we talk about amateur radio, electronics, electricity, telecommunications, computers, and pretty much anything in our lives that are touched by those things, which is virtually everything at this point. So, we hope, again, that you'll partake of the dialogue. So the way this works is we're going to, in an orderly way, by call sign group, check in everybody into the net, and then we will proceed with the content, as they say. We'll go around and find out what it is specifically what people wanted to say. So you check in with your call sign, your name. You indicate whether you have a question, comment, both, or none of the above. And that's how it works. So let's start with the alpha calls tonight. We haven't done that in a while. Any stations whose call sign begins with the letter A or for alpha, please call K2BAR with your call sign, your name, whether you have a question, comment, both, or none of the above. Please call K2BAR. Okay, well, let's start with the Novembers.
This is November 2, Oscar Echo Lima. You could have just put me in.
But I do you have a question or a comment, or both?
Neither. I was going to be an innocent bystander today at 2 a.m.
That's a rare thing, so... alrighty. Welcome aboard, Mr. Noel. Any other November stations, please call K2BAR. Okie dokie. How about those lovely whiskey stations?
W2JEK, Don, no questions or comments.
Okay, Don, I got you in there. It was a station that doubled with you. Who, pray tell, might that be? This is K2BAR.
WE2R, Charlie, no questions or comments.
Good evening, Charlie. No questions or comments. 0 for 3, oh boy. All right, any other whiskey stations? Okay, let's do the Kilo 2s. That's interesting. All right, how about any Kilo stations?
KC2SQV, James. One very open-ended question tonight.
Good evening, James. We could probably use one of those at this point, so that's good. Any other kilos?
Comment. Good afternoon and evening to everyone.
Yeah, the station who just chimed in, I doubled with you acknowledging, James. I didn't get your call, your name, what your intentions are, anything. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
to the station who just checked in again, please?
This is Stewart, KC2SQP. No questions, no comments.
Okay, Stewart, very good. We have SQV and SQP on the same net, sequentially logged in. Very good. All right, good evening to you, sir. Any other stations, any call signs?
His K2AMI, a little bit late, but checking in with only a comment. No other questions.
Good evening, Tony. We'll probably put your question or your comment up top after we get everybody checked in. Hey, who else?
This is K2ZC, Dave. No questions, no comments.
Hey, Dave, it's good hearing you. By the way, my friend Steve Leonardi, who Donna's bumped into, would probably enjoy your company, too. We got to get him on here on Thursday nights. He's only checked in once or twice, fairly recently, actually. But he's been a real QRP kit builder to the word go. It's really good. All right. I have a radio on. All righty. Anybody else?
KC2ZRG. Name is Rick. No questions or comments.
Hey, Rick. Very fine. Just have to... I didn't realize I had my HT on in my pocket, my other HT. And a little intermod. But good hearing you, KC2ZRG. And good hearing you on as well. And any other station?
KC2ZMA, Marco, what a question.
Good evening, Marco. Welcome with your question. Any other stations? Okay, one more time. Any stations with comments or questions for that? Or even without questions or comments from that, please check in at this time. This is KCBAR. Okie dokie. So, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take Tony's comment. I have a follow-up comment on a previous pointer. And then we have James's question. We have Marco's question. Any more before we go on? Okie dokie. Well, K2AMI, it is your ball, Tony. K2BAR.
Hey, this is K2AMI with just a comment that we will be having a Bergen Amateur Radio Association annual, I guess you'd call it a midwinter auction. Well, we only have one auction, so I guess it's an annual auction. And that's going to be on March the 6th at 12 noon at the Westwood High School cafeteria. And again, this is not a flea market. Don't get there at 6 o'clock in the morning. Get there 6 hours later at 12 o'clock noon. 1 o'clock, if you're going to buy something, you should be in your seats by 1 o'clock. But interesting enough, Jim Joyce surveyed or typed into the website that covers the Raritan Valley auction, which is tomorrow night down in Raritan Valley. And they run their auction differently than ours. And maybe we'd like a little discussion on that. If you could type in, Gordon, if you look, go to your computer and type in Raritan Valley auction, Raritan Valley Amateur Radio Club auction. And anybody else who's got an opportunity to do that, I don't know the exact website, but I'm sure you can find it. And you'll find out some of the rules that they have, which are different from ours. Maybe a little discussion on that point might be interesting.
Well, that is interesting. I mean, ours is pretty straightforward, but theirs might be better. So, unfortunately, the Raritan Valley Group stresses the ARC tunnel, so that probably is not what we wanted to do. I see New Providence. So, anyway, let's see. I'm at their website, but I don't see their auction stuff here.
So I could just get the ball rolling with some comments that I observed?
I think that would be great, because I'm actually mobile. I pulled over to take your suggestion, and it wasn't very fruitful and probably not very fun to listen to. So go right ahead, Tony.
Well, among the things, they don't charge any commission on the items sold. If you bring something there and you sell it, the seller gets the full auction price. Okay, so how do they justify the auction? Well, they charge $5 admission for anybody going to the auction. Of course, if you have 50 people that come to the auction, that's $250, I guess, huh? So at $5 a head, 50 people is $2,500, which is not too bad. The way Barrett does it is we charge 10% of the sale of the product, all right, but not to exceed $20. In other words, if you happen to have sold a $200 or $300 item, you still only get charged a maximum of $20. The first $100 is deducted as a 10% charge. So that was a little different observation that I thought was kind of interesting. And now they also do something else that's kind of interesting. After the complete auction is over, they have what they call a flea market. And if anything that's not sold, they can be left on the tables, and you could wander around and attempt to buy them as a flea market sale. So they have a one-hour flea market after the auction, which is, again, an interesting concept. I don't know whether you found the site yet, Gordon, but those three points I thought were very different from what we do and what worthwhile considering. What do you think? Back to you, Gordon.
Since we have a noontime start, I think that would work. I don't think that would work for, let's say, the Fairlawn auction, which I think is the evening, if I remember right. So I don't think that would work at all. But I think for Barra it would work just fine. Now, we have not advertised an admission fee and such, so I think that would probably get some people miffed. I would also wonder whether or not people would come if they had to pay $5. You know, but you never know. You just never know. What you might think about is that everybody who comes will either get, a free cup of coffee or a free tea or soda or something like that, as a way to, as part of your efficiency. I think if you did that, you wouldn't even have to give anything else, just a cup of coffee or, some beverage, quantity one. When you come in, you get a ticket for one beverage, and after that, you have to pay for additional ones. But that might whet the appetite, too,
It's K2AMI. These are not rules that we are going to be using yet, but there's something we might want to review with the executive board or Jim Joyce and the group to see what they how it bounces off their shoulders. I do like the idea of the flea market after the auction. In other words, leave the stuff on the table and bargain with the vendor or the fellow selling it, and perhaps come up with a price that didn't go at an auction price. I like that idea. I also disagree with the $5 admission charge. You and I both know how cheap hams are, and to spend $5 for a couple of hours of entertainment is tough. People don't do that in the ham world. So I don't like that $5 admission. And I kind of like our 10% commission idea. I think that works more fairly. Back to you, Gordon, but maybe Ned might want to make a comment on this.
So let's spin it around. Anybody want to make a comment on, the 1,001 ways to make an auction work?
Me too, J.E.K.
Mr. Don first.
I agree with Tony that we should not change this. Do we not charge an admission in that? I don't know just how many people are there, but if you, let's say we've had 100 people there, you would have been taken in, say, $500. I don't know how much you take in from the auction commissions, but, you know, I think you turn a lot of people off. They don't know what's going to be there to begin with. I mean, sometimes there's a lot of computer stuff or chainsaws or weed trimmers and stuff like that that are not really ham radio per se. And a lot of the stuff that is there is stuff that a lot of people wouldn't buy. So you know, to come there and see stuff that pay $5 to see a bunch of stuff that you not probably wouldn't buy, might turn people off. I definitely don't think we should change that. We should no admission and just charge a commission as we've been doing. As far as the selling the stuff afterwards, I don't know how they would how you'd handle that. I mean, actually, nobody wanted enough to buy it on auction, so usually Pete does a pretty good job of trying to get a bid on something, and if it doesn't go, or the person wants too high a reserve, then, you know, it's just not going to be sold. And usually the person that, you know, people start out at, let's say, a $100 item, they say, well, you had a $100 reserve on a thing. Let's try $50 and work our way up. And, excuse me. And so what happens is maybe you get it up to $75 and you know, ask the owner, do you want to take 75? And the guy might say no. So that's the end of it there. Nobody wants it that bad enough to pay $75. He wants his $100, and apparently nobody else is willing to go for it. So, you know, but that's where it's at. The guy, unless the guy changes his mind after the auction's over, he's going to be having a, he's going to have to find somebody else to pay $100 for that radio. Back to that. W2JK.
I think that's your point's well taken, Don. I'm thinking also that there is a converse case that might fill in a gap where no one had the money to bid on the item at the appropriate level, but you at least make a deal to get together and get the item sold at a subsequent time for the full value, and that happens too. I can come to see you tomorrow, or I can come to see you next week, and you know, we can make a deal, that kind of stuff. And I think that, well, that's less likely to happen. I've seen that happen for some of our flea markets. So, you know, it's not totally out of the possibilities of to do that. So, you know, so just think about that as well. Alrighty, so let's see who else is about. Anybody else want to make a comment? Righty. Well, I think we've kind of beaten this one to death remote, but I'll throw it back to Tony.
If you get a chance to go to the website and get to the auction information, they also have pictures of the actual auction, apparently from last year. And disappointedly, what I saw was not very much equipment. They had maybe two or three smaller tables with older equipment on it. And that would definitely negate my spending $5 to go to an auction that doesn't have very much equipment in it. We are usually swamped at our auction, as is the Fairlawn Club. So I think that, you know, there's a possibility of doing something. Again, maybe a charge of $2 or $1 or something like that, just to cover, well, again, maybe $2 and give them a cup of coffee type thing, you know. That might be an enticing invitement. Or give them a free hot dog or whatever for a couple of dollars. But the $5 number seems high to me, so I'm against that. also the availability of equipment is a factor too. And again, guys, look at the Raritan Valley Amateur Radio Club auction site on the website, on their website, and you'll see that they aren't quite as successful at getting equipment as we have been. And again, theirs is Friday nights. I don't know, there's from 7 to 9 or something like that. And that's something I would travel down to the area for, you know. Anyway, turn it back to Ned and remind everybody that our auction is free admission, okay. You can bring your wife if she's got the money and the kids if you wish, as long as they're not too unruly. And you can have a little fun and some munchies too. We hope to have hot dogs and coffee and some desserts of some type there. So it'll be a nice afternoon out in February. In March, I guess. Back to Ned.
It's definitely in March. It's the first Sunday in March. At noon, the doors open, and the auctioning starts at 1. And a good time is always had by all. I always have a good time with it. Alrighty. Let's see. I don't know what else we have on this subject, but I'll leave it one more just in case someone wants to make a follow-on comment.
To JK again.
Sure, Don. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, as I was saying, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And what Tony says is there's not much equipment there with this Raritan auction from the pictures he was showing. And let's face it, people aren't going to... maybe that's a sign of what happens when you charge admission. You shouldn't be charging admission. We're doing the right thing here. You know, charging admission, and yet if somebody does sell something, they pay a commission. At least if it's a sale happens, the guy gets to pay a little commission and he gets his merchandise sold. But there's nothing down there to speak of, probably, from what Tony's saying. And maybe it's not right to charge or even think of charging any admission, not even $2. Somebody else is going to have to be handling that part of the job, too. We've had enough work as it is. Back to that, WTJK.
N2OEL?
Noel, go ahead.
I know better than to bring my wife to an auction. N2OEL.
Yeah, his wife has an accounting background. That would not be good. Just an observation also, that leaves us with the idea of the flea market after. I don't see a reason why not. And if we advertise that, that'd be good. If we didn't, you know, if we mentioned at the beginning of our auction even this year that we will stay around for at least a half hour or up to an hour for people to make deals after the auction, that's fine too. We could do that. That would be just fine. We might consider doing that. Anyway. Oh, yawn, yawn, yawn. So, Tony, thank you for that. That's very, very good. So, I have a new topic before we go into our questions. And the topic is, I think I had asked a while back for a reference to a plastic vendor that might be of interest to amateurs who have various requirements for plastics for projects. And we are blessed with a location of Acme Plastics. I think Rachel pointed that out. And recently I ventured over there. And I must say, they have a rather interesting assortment of goodies. Under $100, you must pay cash. But it's still quite attractive. It's right over in West Patterson, off of Browertown Road, off of Route 46, basically between 46 and 80. Not a big deal to get to or locate. And, they have all sorts of plastic materials, tubular and sheet materials, as well as rod stock. So if you're looking to build an antenna, it'd probably be a really cool place to go play. So do keep that in mind as well. I bought a 3/4 inch by 1/2 inch, 3/4 inch OD, 1/2 inch ID. What do you call it? Lucite tube, and about 6 feet long for about $3. So that was interesting. So that's something to keep in mind if you're building antennas, especially if you want to build antennas for direction finding or antennas for portable operation, things like that. You want to make them light and kind of interesting. What's nice is you can store it and you can see what's stored inside. So that might be another thing to think about as well. So anyway, they have Lexan, they have acrylic. I bought an acrylic sheet for it to use as a window panel, which when I get a chance, I'm going to pop one of the windows out of the back side of the truck and build an access panel to replace the window that's there. And that's going to be quite an endeavor, so I'm looking forward to that. So anyway, any other comments or questions?
K2BAR, says KC2ZRG. Question. If you have any questions for ACME, I'm supposed to be over there tomorrow afternoon having lunch with one of the workers over there. If you'd like, I can pass along any questions. I'm sure they're going to be interested to hear that they were the topic of discussion on the technical net. Back to net.
Yeah, well, I bought a piece of acrylic because it's reasonably robust. About a piece of 1/2 inch acrylic that you know their shop has essentially scrap pieces that they straighten up and make available, or overruns or things people didn't buy, whatever. And then I could have used 1/4 inch, but the 1/2 inch was available. And then I don't know how I'm going to cut it, but probably with a really slow scroll saw. Like the ultimate slow Dremel motor tool. And then, let's see, I bought the plexiglass. The plexiglass are some sort of acrylic. I can't remember, but it's clear tubing. And I have actually 3 telescoping sections. They'll go up about 16 feet. But I was thinking you use it as a boom for an antenna. You could use it to support a feed point, where you didn't want to be too obvious about it. He has all sorts of little things you could do with it. A friend of mine has Steve Leonardi has a support problem for his center of his dipole. He's worried about the balun being too heavy. And so this might be a way for him to just take some vertical load off of it. But anyway, it was fascinating to look at. Yeah, yes. I take it you're in that business or in a related business to that. KC2ZRG, K2BAR.
No, Gordon. I'm actually I'm friends with one of the owner's sons over there, and I'm actually going over to talk about the possibility of work after teaching and things like this. Just joining up to try and find out a little bit more information about what his plans are. But I do know the family pretty well, and I've been using them for plastics since about 1998, back one of my last years in college, and I've been using them for just about everything I can think of, plastic, acrylic, rods, flat panels, just about anything you can imagine made of plastic. Back to you, Gordon.
Oh, that's a good find, too. We might want to think about what materials would be good for antenna projects, and maybe coordinate that as part of kit night and do a bulk purchase of materials. Let's say we want to build quaggies and the like. I'm trying to remember if they were open in the 70s and early 80s, because if they were in late 70s, early 80s, I seem to remember having been there before, but their retail establishment across the parking lot is manned by a very capable, very energetic person, and he was extremely helpful, appropriately upsold me a piece of 1/2 inch,
what's it called? I can't remember the last thing. I said it three times already, but anyway, the real hard stuff that it wasn't fibroblasts, it wasn't leukocyte, it was the other thing. Anyway, but it was very nice, and I think we could have some fun, but that's something to consider for a project, to say the least. So, what else? I guess back to you, KC2ZMA, WTTD, back to you, Marco. Where did you go?
KC2ZMA, I'm up, Gordon.
It's you, I'm sorry. Sorry, ZRG, not ZMA. I'm sorry, brain dead.
Hello, Gordon. I'm sorry, I'm still trying to learn the technical side of the net, too, so I wasn't sure if that was my cue to come back in with a comment or was it addressed to the other individual. At any rate, no, that was it. I just really thought it was interesting you brought them up. I've used them for all sorts of things. They are local, and they do have a pretty significant, they had a pretty significant retail business up until a few years ago, and now they do. They sell mostly the scrap material, which is, for the most part, more than enough for anything we've used it for. But very interesting that you bring this up tonight, and I have a meeting with them tomorrow afternoon to sit down and touch base. I think this will be a funny topic to bring that up. There always seems to be something that comes back up and brings me back to acne classics. Anyway, back to you, Gordon.
Yeah, okay, Rick. Very fine. Well, does anybody else have anything they want to add to this for Rick? All right, well, there are several guys in the club who have been known to make some really outrageous antennas. I'm one of them. Don's been known to make a few interesting things. God only knows WI2W has. He makes cheap Yagis, but instead of putting on a piece of wood, a piece of plastic would probably be better. So, it's certainly interesting. Alrighty. Well, thank you very much for that, Rick. That's an excellent thing. KC2ZRG, K2BAR. Anything else? All right, well, our open-ended question goes to KC2SQZ. Mr. James, over to you.
K2BAR, KC2SQZ. Good evening, all. Just had a chance to watch the Space Shuttle Discovery take off for what will be its last mission. And the second to last Space Shuttle flight that NASA has planned for the time being. And just how space and aeronautics connects with amateur radio opens up a wide array of opportunities for amateur radio operators to connect. And now that program is going to be shut down, I just want to know, how that will limit amateur radio opportunities, that particular avenue of amateur radio, and I guess, B, maybe some people on the net can share their experiences bouncing signals off. People have bounced signals, of course, off the moon, or any interesting stories they might have, and how it's furthered their involvement in amateur radio. Back to net.
Well, two things real quick, and then I'll pass it around. One is, I never worked them, but when W5LFL, Owen Garriott, was the first astronaut to communicate by amateur radio, I remember sitting there with my ICOM 2AT in the parking lot of where I worked over in Teaneck with my HT sitting on the car roof with a rubber duck and hearing him as clear as could be. That was pretty impressive. And then to answer your question about availability, well, there are always a few, you know, minutes, a few hours actually, during a shuttle mission where members of the crew get on amateur radio. And then on top of that, they run the SARAX package, which is an automated packet robot, basically, that makes packet contacts with stations on the ground, even if there's no human operator available. And they also often have a packet mailbox aboard, which is the SARAX is called the Shuttle Amateur Radio Experiment. And Howie Goldstein, it's called, it escapes me, N2W something, if I remember right. He started with that package. He built that package initially and wrote a lot of the software for it years ago. And then, but I think, you know, other than that, you know, the space station has a lot of amateur radio capabilities, so there's at least some of that. So I think, you know, it'll be all right. It'll just be somewhat reduced, but it won't be horribly reduced over the next couple of years until we get our new space program up and working. Anybody else have comments? K2JK. Mr. Don.
Yeah, years ago, I had heard the, saw the space shuttle Columbia when it was still, before it had the unfortunate accident. And I could see it and turned my 2 meter, I had a Kenwood 2AT handy talkie with a rubber duck on it. And I heard him talking, doing some QSOs, then they went to sending some data down or a packet or something like that. But I did hear him, and you know, I never sent away for a QSL card. I guess I should have, but at any rate, you know, it was truly line of sight because I could actually see this thing, star moving through the atmosphere up there, I guess 250 miles up or whatever. So, yeah, it was quite a thrill to actually hear and see that. Of course, I didn't try to make contact with them. I gather from what I hear with these that these contacts are rather limited. I don't know. I just haven't gone to look for them. But it seems like every time I hear anything about a contact with them, it's always that somebody has contacted somebody in a school someplace. And it doesn't seem like it generally for the general ham population. Back to that, W2JK.
It's a mixture, but you're right. The ones in the schools get all the press. And they are scheduled, and they do take precedence over ad hoc QSOs. But in any given shuttle mission, there's plenty of ad hoc human contacts. So it does occur. Anybody else?
2AMI with some little information about Fairlawn's future contact.
Go ahead, Tony. That'd be great.
I don't think they have an exact date, but one of the weeks in March, towards the end of March, the Fairlawn Amateur Radio Club, or Fairlawn Emergency Preparedness, whatever they call it, club, but FLARC there, is working with the Fairlawn High School, and they do have a scheduled appointment with the space shuttle. The space station. The space shuttle services the space station. There will be more information coming out as they come up with an exact date, but perhaps by the next Fairlawn Amateur Radio Club meeting, which is the end of the first Friday in March, they might have a definite date. But there is going to be a school contact in Fairlawn through the Amateur Radio Club in Fairlawn, which should be very interesting.
Yes, sir, it should be. Well, very good. Very, very good. And that meeting, by the way, is March 4th, a week from tomorrow. All righty. Anybody else? Okay.
Well, thank you everybody for their comments on that one. Marco, it is your turn. KC2ZMA. Oh, I'm sorry. Wait. I didn't do one more thing. James, you get to put the cap on it. It's your topic. KC2SQV, W2TTT, KTBAR.
Yes, I was concerned that there might be some sort of hazing or something like that, but thankfully, no. Thank you all for the input. It's just, it's a disappointment to see that go. You think that there'd be an advancement in this sort of technology, given how far, how much NASA has given us in terms of the technology, not to be redundant, for lack of a better word. Hopefully things can happen in terms of the program down the line. And it's just an inspiration to want to pursue it more. Okay, KC2SQV, back to that, KC2SQV.
Brady, very good, James. I'm glad you brought the topic up. It was a good topic. And, I watched the Shuttle Amateur Radio Experiment Program, and now the Space Station Project blossom pretty well. Alrighty. Over to Mr. Marco. KC2ZMA, your question, sir. KTBR.
K2BAR, this is KC2ZMA. My question is just, I want to learn Morse code CW, and I wonder if anybody can give me advice of how to start off, or basically what I have here. I have Gordon West Morse code with CDs that goes through the alphabet from A to Z, and he does all the numbers, and I kind of memorized. Basic letters, they have just the dot or the dit. That I could get that down pretty good. But I have also an oscillator with a key that I'm practicing on also. And I know there's a lot of programs out there. There's an iPhone app that's pretty neat. You can tap out Morse code on that. And I just want to know if anybody has opinions or how to get to it, or what's the right way, or what's the wrong way of doing it, or one or the other. That's my question with that. Back to that.
Well, I have very decided opinions about this. Learn the sound of the characters at as fast a speed as you can coherently copy. And that way you learn the sound essentially once. You won't have the migration as you get faster and faster. It's faster and faster, the sound changes, even though the character is the same. So, think about it in those terms. I think that would be better. So, do give it that thought. I learned in the 70s, and I couldn't afford records. Besides my family, even though I bought the records, wasn't going to tolerate my putting, code practice records on the family stereo. My family would have beaten me to death with that. So I learned by sending to myself, which is pretty ugly. I think we probably have a few people here who have different approaches to this. But those are my two basic forms of advice. Jump ball, who wants it? KTBAR. 2JK. I thought you'd never chime in. Go ahead, Don.
Okay, Marco, this is W2JEK. All right, the way I learn is a code practice oscillator. I think somewhere along the line I had borrowed what they called an instructor graph, which was a paper tape device, the key to code oscillator. that wound up like an old Victrola with a hand crank spring motor thing, and you ran this paper tape through it and made the dots and dashes. Well, that was good, because then you were receiving the code, not sending the code as you would with the code oscillator. And you also practiced with W1AW's broadcasts. You get them on 80 meters at 3780-something, what is it here? 3.5815 or some frequency like that. They have the scheduling QST to when they have it. They start at 5 words and work their way up 7.5, 10, 13, and 15. And once you get to the hang of where you can use it at 5 words a minute, try and get on the air with it, because that's what happened to me. I started out as a novice. Let me drop it a minute. Started out as a novice and was on the air with it, and in those days you had to get your code speed up to 13 words a minute to renew your license and upgrade to general. Also, I had at that time, in addition to the novice license, I had taken the technician test and passed that. So all I needed to do to upgrade to general was to, because I had the technician license, was to pass the 13 word of best. That being said, there's a lot of stuff on the internet today. There's, like you say, there's Gordon West has, some kind of media that you mentioned, and I guess all of it is good. The idea is that when you hear the sound, you know that it's a da-da is an A, and so on. And the recognition of it or the association becomes a sound, becomes the letter, or in your case, you make the letter become the sound if you use the code practice oscillator. And I guess the word is practice, too. Is just keep at it. It's like learning a language. The more you do use the language, the better you become at it. Also, I should know that a lot of this telegraphy started with the old landline telegraphers before radio. And they learned to make a lot of abbreviations. So a lot of what you see on there is gibberish, maybe, what some of these hams are sending. When you work other hams, and what you'll find is that is they've abbreviated things rather than sending out 599 is a lot of time on a contest, so they just send the letters 5NN, which means 599, what they call cut numbers, stuff like that. So there's a lot of nuances there that you want to learn too, but basically just go to the code oscillator, the CD disc or whatever you have. Try, if you have a shortwave receiver, go for 1AW. And also, I don't know what they are, but there might be some stuff online for code practice, and maybe some other people can help you out with that. Back to net, W2JK.
Yeah, that's very good advice. Very, very good advice. Anybody else?
K2ZC.
Yeah, Dave.
I'm fairly new to Morse code myself. I just got my extra, I guess, about 4 years ago. And that was after they abolished the code and all I had to do was take the test. I took a 5 words per minute test back in 75 to get my technician, but then after passing the test, I never used code again. But after getting my extra, I was determined to more or less just legitimize it by learning the code. And I use some of these online code programs. There's a good one called G4FON. It's a Koch trainer. It uses the Koch method, which, like Gordon said, you copy your character as fast as you can. Start off that way with try to copy at least 15 or 20 words a minute character speed. But the actual effective code speed you can set down to 5 words a minute. So you're going to copy the character real fast, and there's going to be a long space in between characters. And then as you get better, you just shorten up that space. and that's the best way to learn it. There's a couple of programs. There's another one called RUFZXP. You can actually look up code programs. These are all free programs on the internet. Just Google, code practice programs, and these will probably pop up. My favorite is Morse Runner, and it's a contest simulator. And that got me interested in contesting, and now I do a lot of contesting. I can copy a call sign at about 50 words a minute, so that's good for contesting. They normally run about 30 words a minute, so I have a very poor buffer. I can't read a word behind. I can only remember like one letter, so I have to write real fast. It's a lot of fun, really, code. I enjoy it. I worked the contest last weekend, and I made over 700 contacts on the weekend, just in CW. So I wish you luck, and really get into it, and practice, as they say, but don't practice too long, because then it gets bad. I think they recommend doing like 20-minute spurts, maybe three times a day. And the speed all of a sudden comes all at once. It seems like you learned it overnight. So good luck to you.
Okie dokie. Thank you. Very good, Dave. Anybody else have any comments? Well, I did get on the air and listen to Code Practice. But not the ARRL Code Practice. I listened to whatever stations I could in Manhattan at the time, occasionally in Little Falls when I was on vacation or on a weekend out in New Jersey when I lived in the city in high school. It was pretty painful, though, so I literally had to depend on my own sending ability to learn how to receive the code. A very, very stressful way to do it, but gave me total governance to how fast I should go, and et cetera, et cetera. Anybody else have any follow-ups for this topic? Please call K2BAR. Hey, Don.
One of the things that some people encounter in learning the code, and this is why, as Dave recommended, learning the code at 15 or 18 word a minute, even though they're spaced out like that, and then the Scotch method, if you start out learning it exactly 5 words a minute and it's all spaced out to 5 words a minute, then they change it to, say, 10 words a minute, everything all goes, all your training is sort of, you got to all retrain yourself to 10 words a minute, and then you work your way up to 13 and then to 50. A lot of people get into a plateau at around 10 to 12 words a minute. That's why the 13 words a minute was the code speed for generals back when they had the code for the general and the extra class, because when they knew that you got past the 13 words a minute, you went past that plateau that was in there, and you were able to converse with code rather capably. So that's why they had that at that time. However you learn it, Marco, go to it, and good luck with it. Back to net, W2JEK.
Okay. Hey, anybody else? Well, thank you, Don, for bringing that up. That's a good topic. All right, any other questions for that tonight? Had a good net tonight, and I'm glad everybody checked in. Are there any late check-ins, for that matter, if I want to be credited for attendance on the net? Please call K2BAR.
K2BAR, KO2OK, Bennett here.
Mr. Bennett, yes. We will check you in. And you missed the point about Acme Plastics, but what a wonderfully delightful place that is to play.
I'm sorry, what's the name of it?
Acme Plastics over in West Patterson on Browertown Road, right off of Route 46.
I'll have to catch up with you on that sometime. I'd like to hear more. But I won't hold it, and I don't really have any comments. I just came back from the city from dinner with the family, so back to net.
Ah, very good. Go to any place cool?
We like to go to a place called Joe Shanghai. It's down in Chinatown, and they're known for their soup dumpling.
Oh, man, that sounds good. All righty. Well, that's good. That's very, very good. All righty. Very, very nice. Any other comments from that, from any, you or anybody else?
K2ZC.
Dave.
I was looking at the Acme Plastics website. After you guys mentioned it, I looked it up, and I was looking at that polycarbonate tubing. I was wondering, is that what you bought, Gordon?
I believe so, yeah. It's clear polycarbonate tubing. I bought three sections, and the smallest one cost me about $3.50, and you know, the small diameter and the larger ones cost me a bit more, but the whole thing was less than $20.
Now, what lengths do they come at?
In this rack, they were 6-foot lengths, but in fact, I think about it, I think the whole thing cost me $13, $10 for the two bigger pieces, and $3 for the skinny little piece, which is 3/4 inch OD and 1/2 inch ID. But they telescope really nicely, so I was thinking of possibly making some very flexible spreaders out of it, you know?
Exactly, that was my next question. I was going to ask you, what do you think, how do you think they would hold up in a hex beam?
I think they'd kick ass.
Okay, I got to look into that, because I'm thinking maybe over the next 6 months or so I'm going to put up a hex beam. I got a base plate from Rob. He had one laying around that he picked up at a, I think he said he found them at the recycle center or something. So I was looking at the fiberglass rods. They can run well over $100 putting together 6 of those. So I don't know if this would be any cheaper, but it's something to look into. Okay, thank you very much for the information. This is K2ZC, back to net.
Okay, so for the hex beam, how many... Do you need, isn't it 4 spreaders that are horizontal and you kind of drape the elements across it?
No, it's 6 spreaders, hence the word hex. I guess you would need 3 sections, probably 15-foot spreaders, 6 of them.
Okay, so if... All right, you're right, I got you. So... On the center one, how long end-to-end does it have to be? About 30 feet?
No, they'd all be equal length. Like a spider, you know, only 6-legged spider from the hub. You'd probably use a bigger diameter piece of tubing, then you telescope a smaller one inside that, and a third length, maybe make them like 5 foot each, and maybe, you know, overlap by a foot if you said they came in 6 foot length, so you'd end up with like a 15-foot spreader.
Right, and what I'm thinking is that if you, I don't know if it'll, I mean, in this particular rack, it, you know, it's, Rick said some of the stuff is, shall we say, spare, but you can order anything you want and get in the diameters you want, etc. But so you don't have to have that many seams if you want. So in my case, I was looking at 3 pieces, 6 feet each, so it would be 16 feet. Once I tell 2 telescoping overlaps, would give me 16 feet, if I remember right. So that would be pretty awesome. It was 6, 5, and 5. So, I you know, by the time you finish through the overlap,
But, you know, certainly got my attention for obvious reasons. My machine rebooted, unfortunately, as I was driving, so I've had to, get my web browser going again. But I'm gonna go look. But I would think polycarbonate or if you don't mind it yellowing, acrylic is probably cheaper.
Yeah, I guess it's going to depend on the tensile strength and everything too, and the flexibility of it. If it's comparable to the fiberglass, the fiberglass works quite well, but it gets expensive when I think if you buy the ones that are already assembled, or they're not already assembled, you have to assemble them yourself, but you can buy the pre-cut ones from some of the guys that put together the hex beam kits, and I think they charge about $120 just for the spreaders and the hardware, which is just a few hose clamps. So, okay, thanks for the information. I got to run. My wife's hollering. I got to get the garbage out and all that stuff. I got to get to bed. Of course, I got to get up early tomorrow. I'm working one day a week, sometimes two days a week. So, okay, thanks a lot for the information and good net. And I learned something. back to net. This is K2ZC.
Okay. Very good. Well, it's certainly something to look at, and I'm definitely checking some dimensions on this thing, too. Oh, I see how it's done. So it is a little different than what I expected. So, yeah, we could definitely do something like that. Very, very cool. Alrighty, well, I'm looking at the W1GQL, Golf Quebec Lima, homebrew Hexbeam page. So, very cool. It might actually fit on my lot, which is in itself some good news. Oh, I have some good news, by the way, for those of you who might recall that I thought I had bent my mast. The good news is I have not bent my mast. The bad news is I sheared the bolts from the bottom of the rotator. Used cheap bolts, probably some cheap quarter 20s, and I probably stood them off, and it gave a little bit of a moment arm, and they eventually, with that very heavy mast that I have, sheared loose. So my guess is the cable is still seemingly rotating, but I'm no longer bolted into the tower, so I'm going to have to go up there with a new rotator for my spare stock and chop off, get the old rotator out, put the new rotator in with some sturdier bolts, and, rewire the thing as well, so while on the side of the tower. But that's a much easier problem to solve than the one I thought I was going to have to solve. So things are already a happy day in my household. So anyway, just thought I'd mention that. Any other comments from that before we close?
KC2ZMA?
All right. Marco, sorry.
This is KC2ZMA. I'd just like to thank you, everybody, for your advice and opinion and everything. And I really do appreciate it. This is KC2ZMA. Back to net.
No problem. I'm glad you were able to join us here. A five-element, hex beam. It's a pretty nice. I like the compactness of this thing, I must say, and definitely worthwhile. Alrighty. Any other comments, questions, confusions from folks? Well, I'd like to thank everybody for signing in. As soon as I get my email file back, I will add KO2OK to the roster and send it off to Bob. Anyway, you guys all have a great night. Thank you again for a great net. You guys make the great net. So we'll talk about hex beams next week and maybe some more acrylic plastics and Lord knows whatever else. And we'll probably get excited about the pending Fairlawn meeting and the pending Batter auction next weekend, a week from this weekend. Very exciting. This is KTBAR, W2TTT, signing clear and thanking the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club for the use of their repeater.